The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Ron have a deadline to come to an agreement?
We'll just see how it is. We're ready to go anytime we want. Would I rather make a deal? I'm not looking to kill people. Because people die, a lot of people die, and we don't want that. So they asked us, Iran specifically, but the other three said we really... I asked Saudi Arabia, the king. I said, the crown prince. I said, what would you rather do? Would you rather have us do this or not? They said, we would much prefer a deal as opposed to an attack. Because you don't know where these attacks lead. I mean, will they be flooded with people pouring into their country? A disaster? A lot of bad things can happen.
Bernie Moreno's target in that hearing today was a man who has done more in service to this country and the world than every senator in that room and the entire current United States Senate combined.
I know you're flustered now, and it is.
I'm not frustrated at all. I am frustrated.
And honest.
The reason I'm frustrated is because you are the HHS secretary, and you are talking about things that lead to vaccine hesitancy in this country, and it is something that causes problems for people when there is not anything.
Let me ask you something. Do you see your job as ending vaccine hesitancy, or do you see your job as telling the truth to the American people?
I see my job as telling the truth, and the truth is that there is study after study after study. It's one of the most studied things out there in science.
You're repeating it like a parrot. You're repeating it like a parrot.
So
I've actually read the science. Let's come back here and debate the science.
I'm not debating this with you.
Of course you are.
No, because I'm not debating.
All you know how to do is repeat things that people told you and say, trust the experts. That's what you did during COVID. Now we know that Anthony Fauci, who was the expert, was lying about everything.
Many migrants have been left frustrated and angry. They risked so much trying to get to Ceuta, only to be turned away, or in some cases, met with threats and violence.
My name is Imad. I entered Ceuta via the sea crossing. The Spanish said they treated us well. They did not. First, they closed all shops and stopped us being able to get food. They treated us harshly. They took up arms against us and threatened to kill us. We saw people who died in front of us. This is a shame for Moroccans like us. We were targeted by the Moroccan community in Ceuta.
According to Spain's interior minister, things are now returning to normal.
It has also been possible to turn the situation around in such a short space of time, thanks to our resolute and ongoing collaboration with Moroccan authorities, with whom we maintain an ongoing partnership based on trust and hard work, which has developed over recent years.
You know, I saw Spain yesterday, and I watched the catastrophe that took place. It looks like an invasion of a country by hundreds of thousands of people. And that same thing's going to happen to us if the Republicans don't get elected, except worse, much bigger, much easier to get into, just invading the country. And what that is weak law, bad management, but very liberal law. They passed a couple of laws, and people read. You know, people are smart. They read from other countries, and they swam that 3-mile swim, or however they got in, but nobody's seen anything like it.
More of the same in the present evil world. You've got mass illegal immigration. We covered that on Friday's show, of course. All the revelations about Fauci from his diary, and then, of course, the, what was it, 111? pleadings of the fifth. And yet still, you have RFK. He's going at it with Dana Bash on CNN. You don't see 1 ounce of contrition coming from the regime media. So as I say, it's more of the same. Even when the lies are exposed, even when the problems of illegal immigration are on display for everyone to see, what do we do? What changes do we make? What do we try that's new and different and bold? And then you hear the politicians talk as if, hey, everything's taken care of. Thanks to our friends in Morocco, we've got it all sorted out. Here, Donald Trump was prepared to unleash an attack on Iran, which we were told lost the war, were totally decimated. This is months ago. Their navy sunk to the bottom of the sea. They have no military, no missiles left. And here was Donald Trump just inches away from starting what he said anyway was the biggest war operation since World War II. Well, that doesn't sound like Iran's been decimated then. But then, you know, he checks with his friends in Qatar and Saudi Arabia. What do you guys think? You want me to go ahead with? I'd rather give diplomacy a chance. And so here we are again. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. We've got a lot to get to, including the video, or at least most of it, that was played last night at the SCP Final Awards ceremony, just to give you a little bit of a snapshot. It's 22 minutes long, though, so as you know with me, time goes quickly, and I'll probably get to where we have 22 minutes left and realize we've got to cover a little bit more. Maybe we'll just take the show a little bit longer today so that you parents of some of these campers can at least have that video on video, courtesy the Trumpet Daily. So if we have the time, we'll fit that into the last bit of the program. So this cycle of failure, I was just thinking on the drive over, how many times in the Old Testament, with respect to the people of Israel, God's chosen nation, God raised them up to be an example. And look at how many times he said that they were just so stubborn and stiff-necked. There was an exchange with Moses. This is after the golden calf incident in Exodus 32. And verse 9, and the Lord said unto Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. It is a stiff-necked people. They just won't change for the better. They keep reverting back to their old ways. They keep trying tired ideas that have been used before endlessly. Every nation around them has used this. Or these ideas, failed experiments. It says, now therefore let me alone, that my wrath may wax hot against them, and that I may consume them, and I will make of you a great nation. Here God was prepared to start over with Moses. And if you know about this exchange, Moses, this meek and humble individual, he said, look, don't do this. Your reputation would be on the line if you did this. That's the way Moses spoke to his friend, God in heaven. And so God reconsidered. But man's stubbornness has continued. And we just see this cycle of failure. Look at how hard it is for human nature to change for the better. I was reading an article by Herbert Armstrong the other day, and he was talking about human nature and how it can, in some cases, come to a knowledge of what is true, of what is right. You hear the truth of God, for example, this program, or you go to our website, you read our literature, and there's plenty of people that look at the content, the material, and say, yeah, I agree with that. But Mr. Armstrong made the point that human nature, being human nature, it can acknowledge that it's true, but once it realizes that it actually has to change. It actually has to become an overcomer or a conqueror. That's when the hands go up and they say, now, hang on a second. I didn't sign up for this. I like the comforts of where I am at the moment. I'm not willing to go all the way. Certainly not like Mr. Armstrong did in 1926, 100 years ago. And he realized his whole life, his associates, his everything was about to change dramatically. But for the better, when you look at it spiritually. But as far as friends and family go, he met with a lot of resistance all through his life, all through the course of his life. Obstacles, resistance, fighting every step of the way to raise up Ambassador College or whatever it was he was engaged in. But look at how difficult it is for people to change for the better. And also look at, with respect to this endless cycle, it's like Groundhog Day with the Iran negotiations. The war's on, the war's off. War's on, war's off. We've had 6 months of this. And you know, I'll read it to you when we get there. In He Was Right, there's a chapter, you know it well, many of you, that America has won its last war. You should go back and review that chapter because it's amazing how many times Iran is mentioned. And it takes us back to the beginning of this Islamic regime, 1979. When they took those American hostages and Jimmy Carter said, now you better not do that. You better return those hostages. We might have to unleash the wrath of the United States upon you. And the Ayatollah just taunted Jimmy Carter. It was embarrassing. That's what's happening here. I got to be honest. I hate it when I sound like the regime media. They are really ganging up on President Trump on this issue. Suddenly, they're all war hawks. If Obama comes back in, you can be sure they will. You see it in Dana Bash. She's going at it with RFK, and she's talking about vaccine. Look, the reason I'm challenging you is because what it sounds like is that you're a vaccine hesitant, and we can't. And RFK was totally right. Look, are you here promoting vaccines, or are you here to report the truth? Are you here to be a newscaster? They're just Democrats, radical Democrats at that. She says there at one point in the exchange, hey, listen, all of our reporting 6 years ago was, you know, it was based on, by the way, you were, you know, Fauci worked for Trump. Well, then Trump was, he was booted out thanks to a stolen election. And then you've got Fauci and Biden and all of Biden's people. And she talks about how we were just listening to what the president said. That's back when they listened to the president. You know, if it's auto pen, that's fine. We'll take whatever he says, swallow it, hook, line, and sinker. If it comes from Trump, you can't believe a word of it. Same with RFK. You're not going to see repentance from the regime media. But as I've said so often, this is not something that's just unique to one side of the aisle, politically speaking. It's on both sides. The sickness, the stubbornness, you see stiff-necked resistance to God and His truth everywhere in our society. It says in Isaiah 57 and verse 10, you are wearied in the greatness of your way, yet said you not, there is no hope. You have found life in your hand, therefore you were not grieved. You just, you were weary because you felt like you were so great. You had it all figured out. You knew the way to go. God says you won't even look at yourselves. You certainly won't judge by the fruits. You just continue on, making the same mistakes over and over again. Isaiah 5 and verse 4, it says, what could have been done more to my vineyard that I have not done it done in it. Wherefore, when I looked that it should bring forth sweet grapes, brought it forth wild, bitter grapes. This is God. This is God and how he looks at and evaluates what man has been doing. And he says, you know, what more could I have done to help you see the error of your ways? Man, even through the tribulation, you could see all the prophecies in the book of Revelation. Even when the bombs are falling, even when this world is going through the day of the Lord and God is punishing the nations, how do you think the nature of man is going to respond to that? Listen, God, I'll do whatever it takes. Have mercy on me. In fact, they're still shaking their fists at God in defiance. And God's response is, look, what else is there that I can do? You're so stubborn, so stiff-necked. God has to punish us in this way because we won't look at ourselves. We are unwilling to change, to repent. We will not look at history. The end of history is here. That's why that chapter, and he was right, is a good one to review, because you just get the history, you know, from World War II to today, taking you through, you know, the end of the war, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the anti-war era, you know, the hostage crisis, the Iraq, the so-called victory in Iraq back in the 1990s. Then you've got the war against terrorism and the effort that went into Afghanistan and Iraq, but not Iran, because as we said in that chapter, Iran's backed by Russia and China. Those are some pretty big players on the world stage. So we went for the small potatoes after we declared a war on, I guess, an idea, the war against terrorism. Well, who sponsors terrorism? The number one state sponsor of terrorism was Iran. The history's there. 50 years of it almost. 50 years. And we keep making the same mistakes. Iran is broadening its zone of attacks. It's fine with escalation. It's fine. President Trump on Air Force One last night, he says, yeah, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE, they all want us to, you know, not go forth with this effort, this war effort, this World War II-like effort. And you know what? Iran doesn't want us to either. They don't? Iran doesn't want you to bomb them to smithereens? And then the next day, that would be today, you've got all these reports of Iranian officials saying, we're not going to the negotiating table today. Defiance. This is what President Trump said yesterday on Truth Social. The USA is locked and loaded and ready to go against the Islamic Republic of Iran at levels of military terror, strength, and power not seen since World War II. Why would you even say this publicly, by the way? That's another point, I guess. Despite this, we have just been asked by Iran and other Middle Eastern countries to hold off any attack in that the parameters of the deal has been agreed to. Iran says, well, hold off for a minute. We've got the parameters in place for a deal. Remember the memorandum of agreement? What was that, in June? And the Trump administration was talking like this is going to lead to eternal peace. And that lasted for less than 48 hours. And here we are again. This would include the immediate, complete, and total opening of the Hormuz Strait and an end to Iran's nuclear threat. Wow, that sounds pretty good for the ninth time. Based on this request, I have agreed for the future benefit of the world and likewise the survival of a successful and prosperous Iran to cancel the attack, subject to being able to rapidly make a deal. So President Trump calls off the massive attack, the World War II style attack, because Saudi Arabia said, hey, let's give diplomacy a chance. UAE, Qatar, even Iran says, you know what? We should talk. We should talk this through. In the New York Post, Iran Foreign Ministry spokesman claimed Monday that no negotiations with the U.S. were in prospect, and Tehran had no plans to host any foreign delegations or send negotiators abroad in the coming days. So there you go. Not even 24 hours later, Iran says, we didn't agree to anything. We're not looking for a deal. There's no way around the fact that this is making the president look really weak. Really, Iran's holding the cards. Iran has the leverage. Evidently, Iran still has enough firepower to justify a World War II-like war effort spearheaded by the United States. Monday's developments appeared to fit a pattern that has emerged since Trump launched Operation Fury alongside Israel more than 5 months ago. On several occasions, President Trump has threatened military action only to later cite diplomatic contacts as the reason for stepping back. Iran, however, has publicly rejected negotiations with Washington since a June memorandum of understanding aimed at ending the conflict collapsed in early July. So we're back to the diplomacy channel. And we've been there, as I say, many, many times without success. This is President Trump on Air Force One, clip two.
Well, now what we're doing is we're talking to them in the form of a negotiation. It begins tomorrow afternoon, and we'll see if it's true. I'd love to do that, save a lot of lives, save a lot of unnecessary power, to be honest with you. It'll take many, many years to ever build it back. If it could, I don't think it would be even buildable then. So we had an attack that would be the biggest attack since World War II, and it would have been disastrous for them. And they didn't want us to do it. And frankly, Saudi Arabia didn't want it either. They thought that a deal is imminent.
Is there a deadline, sir?
The deal is imminent, having to do with the Hormuz Strait and also ultimately the denuclearization of it. So when I hear that, I say, well, do we want to go and be this?
That he would be on the phone with the emir in Saudi Arabia or whoever, saying, yeah, do you want me to go forward with this? That's weakness on display. And then he talks about it. And then he tweets about it. This section, and he was right, as I say. It was an eye-opener. I hadn't read it in a while. But this is from our booklet. It was just recently updated last year. But it says here, he was right that America would lose its wars. If that prediction seemed bold now, if it seems bold now, how bold would it have been in 1950? Mr. Armstrong said that coming out of World War II, when America was the victor. Listen to this history. He kept us out of war, cheered the president's most loyal constituents. President Woodrow Wilson was campaigning for re-election. True to his campaign slogan, the president had kept America out of war. That is, unless you consider the sinking of American ships by German submarines a warlike act. Here the Germans were sinking American ships, and you've got Wilson there saying, listen, peace is breaking out everywhere. There's no wars in my administration. Just total peace. Wilson's defense had been a steady stream of handwritten notes pleading for the Kaiser to stop shooting Americans, just like Jimmy Carter did in 1979. Please, please, stop taking Americans hostage. Herbert W. Armstrong attended that campaign rally in the autumn of 1916. Amid the throngs of Wilson supporters, he found himself not more than 6 feet away from former President Theodore Roosevelt. This is really interesting. He kept us out of war, Mr. Armstrong heard the former president say with contempt. I was president for 7.5 years, he continued. And if I were president now, I would send the Kaiser just one note, and he would know that I meant it. Mr. Armstrong told that story often because it perfectly illustrated what he had been repeating for decades, that the United States had lost the will to use its power. This is history repeating itself. President Trump, in effect, is sending note after note after note to the Iranians, and they're not taking him seriously. They're laughing at him. They're mocking him. They're ridiculing him. They're saying what they said to Jimmy Carter. I'm sorry, but that's true. Shortly after World War II, Mr. Armstrong predicted that the United States had won its last war. Listen to this further on in the same chapter. As I say, it gives you the chronology, gives you the history from 1945 to today. And it refers to the hostage crisis in 1979, where it says a band of Iranian revolutionists stormed the U.S. Embassy in Tehran and captured 52 U.S. staff members. President Jimmy Carter repeatedly demanded that Tehran return the captives, but the Ayatollah said he was beating an empty drum. Carter does not have the guts to engage in military operation. He doesn't have the guts. And then when he finally got the courage to carry out that rescue operation, that was a total disaster. And how many days were they in captivity, the hostages? 400 and something, I believe. Over a year. Iran held the world's greatest superpower at bay for another 8 months after the botched rescue mission. And then it says, one wonders how Theodore Roosevelt would have handled the situation. How would TR have handled that situation? Well, he said about the Kaiser in that rally that Mr. Armstrong attended, I would just send one note and that would be it. And then it's all action. Further on, this is taking us to the war against terrorism following the attack on 9/11. And this same chapter, again, this is in the chapter, America Has Won Its Last War. It's in He Was Right. It says, characterizations of the terrorist threat as vague, shadowy, elusive, and ubiquitous were also misleading. The threat, he's talking about how the war against terrorism, it was the wrong name from the beginning because it didn't identify the cause. Who is causing the war? It says the threat emanates predominantly from a few nations such as Saudi Arabia and above all, Iran. As I say, you go back and reread this chapter and you're surprised, or you may be surprised at how many references there are to Iran. It says here, the trouble is Iran has allies, most notably Russia and China. Afghanistan, that's where we unleashed the war against terrorism first, remember? Afghanistan was friendless and powerless, so the U.S. selected it, or more accurately, the Taliban, as the first target in the war on terror. In terms of contributing to global terrorism, the Taliban was insignificant compared to Iran. Did you hear this? The Taliban was insignificant compared to Iran. And yet, look at what happened in 2021 under the fake president. We left Afghanistan and the Taliban took over. They know. See, they can wait out Uncle Sam. If they can just prolong the struggle, in the end, they win. And that's true for Iran, backed by powerful allies, China, Russia. But it was also true for the Taliban. How bold was that prediction in 1950? America has won its last war. How bold? That was coming from the end time Elijah, God's servant. says here, in terms of contributing to global terrorism, the Taliban was insignificant compared to Iran. But this is the trouble one runs into after failing to properly define the enemy. That's the war against terror. We didn't define the enemy in 2001. And so we got caught up in this shadowy warfare against the Taliban. And later we went to Iraq. Never did we go to Iran, though. And we, at the trumpet, all the way through, we said, you've got to go after the head of the snake. You've got to go after the cause. You've got to go after the number one state sponsor. And, well, earlier this year, President Trump did that. But look at how it's played out. He's looking for a way out. He wants out of this. And so we're back to the negotiating table. We're back to compromise. We're back to bluster. All of these words. This is from the Telegraph. It says here, Donald Trump called off a fresh wave of attacks on Iran amid talks that could hand Tehran at least partial control of the Strait of Hormuz. So the article is about how that they may split it apart. Iran wants control of its half, and then also it wants all the shipping lanes to go through its half. And why do you suppose they want this? Well, so they can control it and charge considerable fees as well. So all of this bluster, the strait has to be completely open. You have to be completely denuclearized. We've made the rounds on this over and over again. And President Trump, he said it in one of the clips we played. I think it was in the cold open. If you don't vote Republican in November, then you can expect Sueda to come to our shores yet again. It already happened during the Biden years. Trump, as far as illegal immigration, the solution is vote Republican. The more things change, the more they stay the same, don't they? An endless cycle, a cycle of human nature, trying it again and again and again. And when it fails again and again and again, that's okay. Just get up during a campaign rally and say, there were no wars under my administration. Yes, it was completely peaceful. The economy was rocking. America was hot. You've heard all of the campaigning. And hopefully, if your eyes are open, you also see the world as it is. And at the same time, know and understand what the real solution is here. We put together a Key of David. And maybe it was Life and Teachings, I forget. But it was a program going through Mark chapter 1. And the true gospel that Jesus came, the beginning of the good news gospel of Jesus Christ. Gospel means good news. And it says that he came in preaching the gospel of the kingdom of God. And as I said in that program, there are modern translations that take out the word kingdom and they just say the gospel of God. Well, why do you want to make it vague? Why do you take out kingdom? Kingdom's a pretty important word. And like I say in that program, changing of to about. That's a pretty significant change as well. The gospel of Jesus Christ, or is it a gospel about Christ? Traditional Christianity would prefer the latter because you just talk about Jesus and then pretend that the world is a pretty good place. And if we can just get more and more people to buy a Bible, there's a revival coming. God says this world, it's headed toward suicide. And if not for God's intervention, you see this in the Olivet prophecy, if not for God's intervention, and he will intervene, we can thank God that he will, we would totally destroy ourselves. Look at the course that we're on. Look at the failed policies that we keep trying, and they don't work. And yet man just continues to refuse to look at himself, to look at his mistakes and evaluate them. He refuses to stop and ponder, Selah, to stop and think What are we doing wrong? And maybe we should turn to God. They will eventually, but look at what man has to go through to finally turn. We'll end on a positive note. The theme for SEP is, or was, Prove God. I drove through campus on the way to the show. It's sad to see them breaking down all the camp tents and things of that nature, the sporting equipment, packing it away again. And the young people are on their way. All good things come to an end, but they, as they were told last night, they just want to make sure they go on from here and make the next chapter in their development even better than this SEP experience. We'll conclude with the final video from SEP 2026. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll see you tomorrow.
The theme of SEP this summer is Prove God. And that's a really important thing to do, to prove God. I want to read a statement that Mr. Armstrong wrote in the Good News in 1978. He wrote this: why do most people believe the things they believe?
So why can weaver birds construct these remarkable and advanced nests with such incredible building skills?
Why does this one come all the way down this way?
So why is it still getting hotter throughout July?
Few, indeed, have ever stopped to ask themselves in retrospect why they believe the things they believe or how they came to believe them. Most people believe that which they have repeatedly heard, read, or been taught. You know what? Those are all things that you need to prove for yourself. We can do a lot to help you get a solid start on proving God. In the forums, we're going to be looking at proof of God through His creation, through science, through answered prayer, through miracles. We're going to prove that the Bible is God's inspired word by looking at archaeology and prophecy and history. We're going to look at how you can know whether you're in the right church. Does it matter what church you attend? And if it does, then how do you know which one is the right one? But in the rest of the time tonight, I want to talk to you about the most important way that you're going to be proving God at this SEP. And that is by living God's way.
SEP basketball, 1, 2, 3.
SEP basketball!
This
is your dream, sir?
This is my dream, soldier! Fight hard. If we win this war, our great nation will prosper for 250 years.
God's way is so different. It's so different from the world's way, but it, in a lot of ways, you know what? It's actually quite simple. It's quite simple, and we've distilled it down to five rules. Five rules. They're in the SEP Code of Conduct. I want you to review these in your dorm tonight. I want you to, you've got them posted there in your dorm. Those of you who have been to camp before, you know all about the Code of Conduct. These are the five rules. Treat every camper with respect. Two is speak graciously. Three is use proper dining etiquette. Four is keep a clean camp. And five is savor the opportunity to live God's way.
Winners of Domino's Pizza are Dorms 1G and 2G. 1G and 2G.
A Napoleon in your dorm?
A Napoleon?
Yep.
Like a person that like esprit de corps?
Yep.
We have Connor Chadwick. He's better than Napoleon.
Quite a bit of activity out there. You know, a lot of folks are welcoming the rain, right? Because it's mid-July in Oklahoma, and sometimes it doesn't rain in mid-July, but it is today.
We really have had a very blessed camp so far. We've had very little sickness. It's been mostly short-lived. If people go into sick bay, it's just for a very short time. They're in and out. We've had very limited injuries. We have good attitudes and no major problems among the campers. We've got happy campers. And I want to talk a little bit about the wonderful weather that we have had. The campers, we've been talking a lot about this so far at camp, but Mr. Stephen Coates sent me some information about how before SAP started, the forecast was that we were going to have a prolonged heat wave, triple digit temperatures for at least 2 weeks, no rain. But the first week of camp, we had temperatures in the 80s. We had occasional showers that cooled temperatures at times down into the 70s. And those couple of times that the rain came, it came at times where it really didn't impact activities at the camp. No real disruption. There was one time when it was like just as we were going into the field house for lunch, then it started this absolute deluge. So we had a few wet campers going through the lunch line, but we were able to enjoy our lunch inside. That's not a small miracle. The mass of air in a heat dome can easily span 500 to 1,000 miles across. It can be several miles high. So that much air weighs several quadrillion pounds. It's roughly the mass of a small mountain range, or the equivalent of tens of millions of fully loaded freight trains. Moving that much air to change the weather, that requires large-scale pressure and wind changes across an entire region of the continent. And God did that for you.
Hello, welcome to Camp Bethany. We are 4G.
Yay!
And here is our lovely, humble abode. Would you like a tent tour?
I would love a tent tour.
Oh, great! Yes. Who wants to get it?
Please!
Oh, Sophia.
Sophia, yes. Let's go.
Did you sleep here? By the way,
you have a disco.
And then,
you have a disco.
It can't be 4G without having dance parties at night.
That's our an awesome camp director.
Yes.
That's Mr. Hilliker, by the way.
I'm looking at you, Hebron.
Ladies and gents, this is the moment you've waited for.
Complain about.
Eli.
A little bit of brother-brother action.
In Proverbs 30, verse 30, God calls the lion majestic, and he calls it the king of the animals who won't turn aside for anything. That's what God wants from us. This calling requires tremendous boldness. God's work moves forward on bold decisions and bold actions. Go back and look at the autobiography. That was one act of boldness after another from God's end time Elijah. The autobiography is a book about boldness and courage. It's the story of human boldness being steadily replaced by godly boldness. Someone who is bold toward God will have a tremendous impact on this world. Just look at Christ. If our people can develop boldness toward God, we will have no trouble getting this work done. Boldness is the key to empowering this work. How bold are you? Sometimes the safest place for you to be will be where our human fears are extreme. But it's the safest place because that's where God wants us. Proverbs 28, verse 1, the wicked flee when no man pursueth, but the righteous are bold as a lion.
The theme of this camp is prove God. This is how you do it. It's, I guess, one of many ways, but you prove God by building for him. And it just shows, then Zechariah 4 says it. People will know that it was not by human might. It wasn't by human power. It was God in you. This is our history. This is who we are. This is where we came from. It says in verse 5, behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. Verse 6 says, and he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Mr. Armstrong, he was sent. God says, I will send you Elijah. God sent him to build the family of God.
Yes, they come here and have fun. But the thing is, they get a new definition of fun. But they learn things here and skills that really are fun and that are enjoyable. Now, we're trying to teach children at these camps some of the better things of life that are worth more than just money. Doing, giving, helping. They learn character here. They learn discipline. This is in 3 weeks, the transformation that is made in the lives of these children is unbelievable. Now, I've tried to tell you what's the purpose of the church. I've tried to tell you what's the purpose of human life and why God had people created. I've tried to tell you something about who and what God is. Now, I hope it made sense to you, and I hope you can take these things home with you. Now, just remember, you're no better than other kids. But you're learning things they haven't had a chance to learn yet. And you try to live these things when you get home. It means there's a bigger responsibility on you to live God's way. And others don't know how to live that way yet. But there's a big responsibility on you to do it, and you'll be so much happier if you do.
Unlike for you young people, as you leave here tonight, it's getting to be almost dark. And as you leave, please look up and see the stars, see those beautiful stars, and realize that that is a part of these billions of galaxies. That they are a part of that vast universe, and realize and never ever forget that there is a connection between that universe and you. There is a connection between that universe and you. God help us to never lose sight of that connection.